Class of 89.
When are you coming?
You said 12 hours, remember?
Well, that's the bad news. The hurricane has turned your way. Now, right now, it's on a course of...
Just answer the goddamn question. When are you coming?
Hopefully within the next 48 hours.
48 hours?
I realize you must have gone through hell.
Gone? Bitch, we still here!
Thanks for tuning in to Class of 89 on the Fangoria Podcast Network, where we take you behind the scenes of our favorite movies that turned 30 this year. I'm Natasha Pacetta, your host and vanguard of the vault over here at Fangoria, and this is our final installment of our series on Leviathan. Decades before he and his team at Legacy Effects created Guillermo del Toro's amphibious star in The Shape of Water, John Rosengrant helped to bring to life a different aquatic creature in Leviathan. John talks about his first meeting with Stan Winston, the inspirations behind the creature's design, his on-screen moment, and much more. Before we get to John's stories, I want to tell you about Fangoria Magazine. Fangoria Magazine has never been better. With your subscription, you'll get a full year of the deluxe 100-page quarterly edition shipped straight to your door. You'll see familiar names like Fango veterans Michael Gingold and Tony Timpone, and bylines like Barbara Crampton and S. Craig Zoller. Go to Fangoria.com and use the promo code CLASSOF for 15% off your first year of freights. That's Fangoria.com, promo code CLASSOF. And since this is a creature-heavy series, I'm excited to tell you about Crawl. Crawl is out now on digital. Sink your teeth into this year's most intense horror film that critics are calling entertaining as hell. Producer Sam Raimi, the horror mastermind behind Don't Breathe and the Evil Dead movies, teams up with director Alexander Aja of The Hills Have Eyes to bring you this relentless, nerve-rattling creature feature. Crawl combines your most primal human fears, confined spaces, fear of drowning, and an onslaught of could-be-anywhere alligators. Certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, get the action-packed thriller with a nasty bite on digital today. Rated R from Paramount Pictures. Now let's get to John's stories from the making of Leviathan. Out of all of the movie monsters that you've had a hand in creating, we're talking about Leviathan today.
Okay. Well, I turned 30 in Rome on Leviathan, so that was a very memorable part of that.
Wow. Did you have a big birthday party?
No, it was Stan, Richard Landon, and I believe Shane was there, and I had a tiramisu at a place called La Cascina across from Cinecittà, which was where we shot that movie.
Wow, what a 30th birthday, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's one of those that you don't forget. I couldn't tell you what I did for my 31st, but I sure remember what I did for my 30th, you know?
Wow, that's so cool. Well, before we really deep dive into the creature that you were so instrumental in creating, tell us about how you first met Stan.
Well, I first met Stan when I had packed up and moved out to Los Angeles, I think in 1982, and I got an opportunity to meet him because my uncle was Stan's lawyer.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, this will be great. But it didn't assure me anything because Stan looked at my book and 5 minutes later he handed it back to me and said, yeah, it reminds me of when I was starting out. And if you want to have a look around the shop, go ahead. And I did. I spent 2 hours looking at every detail in the shop and how molds were, you know, I was completely immersed because this was the first shop that I ever got to see in, you know, the movie business. So, it was very intriguing for me, and it was very inspirational, and I went home and started sculpting maquettes and things instantly, and I would keep bugging Stan, and I actually went and helped him kind of work for free on Mr. Roboto video.
Oh, that's cool.
That he had done for that band Styx, if you can remember that far back.
Oh, yeah.
and so I kept in touch with Stan, but it would took me a little longer to actually get hired by him. And I got hired by Makeup Effects Labs. So I really owe those guys a tip of the hat to taking a chance on me and giving me a start. And there I met Tom Woodruff and I met Shane Mahan there. Met a lot of people there that are in the industry today. You know, Kenny Myers. I mean, the list goes on. There was a lot of people, Mike Mills, Frank Carasosa and, you know, the other guys at Mel, that Alan Opone and Doug White. But that was the first movie I worked on. It was called Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin in 3D.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that one.
Okay. I don't know if you missed that much, but what it was for me, it was the first opportunity to really work on a film, and you get immersed in it and you learn so much. So I was super excited. And more than anything, it also leads to relationships, because this is such a team effort to, you know, movies in general. It takes a village, but you get to meet other people, and then word of mouth is what actually got me hired to go to work for Stan on the Terminator, because some of those very same guys, like Mike Mills and Frank Carasosa, were working for Stan at the time. And Stan was like, I need some more people. And my name came up, and I think Stan also remembered me from, you know, before, trying to always pester him for a job. And so it all came together at that point.
Wow. That's such an amazing story of persistence, and you continued to build your resume because you saw the quality of, you know, Stan's studio, and, you know, you worked on your skill, and you kept building your relationships and building your portfolio, and then you eventually
then
ended
it came
up.
Around
yeah.
To, yeah, getting that opportunity. Because right around the time I had moved out, there might have been an article in your magazine. It was called Baker's Dozen, and it was about, or Baker's Half Dozen or something like that. And it was about Rick Baker and his crew. And I was thinking, wow, that would be so cool to be, you know, part of something like that. And that's sort of what happened with Stan, is that we became, we meaning Shane, Tom Woodruff, and I, and Richard Landon joined at that point, and then later on Alec Gillis. But there became a core of us that sort of became Stan's core group.
Yeah.
Of guys.
You guys were like,
so
Stan,
we created our own. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys, you know, have gone on to, you know, contribute to all of our favorite movies ever. But let's fast forward to the late 80s for a second. It's the height of everyone's obsession with aquatic horror. Stan Winston passed on The Abyss and opted to make Leviathan instead.
But the reason was, we had already committed to Leviathan. And then Jim came around afterwards. And we weren't that big a shop. Like today, we would take on, you know, at Legacy Effects, we'd take on something like that, because, you know, there's four of us that own it, run it, so we divide and conquer, and we do it differently now, because at one point we had Iron Man and Avatar going on in the shop, and was heading up Avatar, and Shane was heading up Iron Man. So, but at that time in the studio's history, we just didn't have the same kind of machine. It was more of a smaller garage shop kind of thing.
Right.
And Stan knew what it would take to do The Abyss, you know, having done several films with Jim, with both T2 and the original Terminator and Aliens,
right,
and how consuming that would be. And he just didn't really feel like we could handle that at the time. Because we had done Invaders from Mars and Aliens simultaneously, and that got to be rough at times, but we made it work. But Stan knew that was going to be, you know, we'd already committed full to doing Leviathan.
Gosh.
So it was hard. It was a hard thing to turn down.
I personally love Leviathan. I think it's, you know, a really cool just creature feature movie. I'm interested in what was the creature very detailed in the script, or was it up to you and the Stan Winston studio team?
No,
to define
it was
the creature?
Up to us. It was up to us to define it. I don't remember it being, they kept calling it a conglomeration of things, you know, if I remember right. It wasn't that defined. It really wasn't.
So what is that process like? Does everyone on the team submit sketches of what the creature would look like?
Everyone was doing sketches. Yeah, everyone was doing sketches. And I say everyone, I think it was Shane, myself, Alec, and Tom. We were all doing sketches for what this thing was going to look like. I think there was elements of everybody's work. And I think what I ended up doing is incorporating it into the maquette sculpture. And then from that point on, I know I was, you know, front and center getting all of that done. But there is, you know, a lot of people had their hands in that sculpture. But I know I was pretty obsessed and on a mission doing that. I remember working night and day, you know, on it, trying to get it done and figuring it all out. And yeah, it was mostly a big wet clay sculpture.
What was your inspiration for the design? Like, what examples from either movies or history?
Well, it was a lot of faking. Yeah, it was looking at a lot of different types of sea life, whether it be even reptiles, fish, but combining it with human DNA, because that's what was going on. Right. That was at least how I understood it, was that there was, you know, this, it's morphing and changing these people and it's taking over. So the edict or the design edict was to have it be a combo of, you know, the sea life kind of form mixed with, if you took human DNA and it became human DNA and fish DNA run awry, you know, because it's not what we did on Shape of Water, where he's an elegant, beautiful,
right,
you know, creature. This is the opposite. This is the Frankenstein's monster version. This is where it goes, you know, where the DNA goes awry.
And it really reminded me of the thing underwater, pretty much.
You know what? That's, I think, what they were going for, essentially. Mm. That's a really good analogy. It was the thing underwater. And I don't remember, or I don't know if it was completely defined, whether it was supposed to be some kind of alien, you know, thing that was causing this, or what it was, but very much the alien, thing underwater kind of idea.
Oh, yeah, you definitely get those vibes. What, do you remember what George Cosmatos and Stan, do you remember any of the conversations with them about the design?
You know, I don't, which is going to, it sounds weird, but I'm sure it had to get approved. But it was a little different back then in the 80s. You know, people kind of just let you go and they trusted you. And that's why they came to Stan, because of his level of design input and his, you know, now every, you know, production has a whole production team, and every producer and executive producer, and everyone's got, you know, a big say so in everything. But back then it was a lot more open and free to kind of roll and go with it.
That's so great. I mean, that must have been so freeing and such a, you know, great environment.
It was very freeing. Yeah. It was kind of like, you know, if Stan was happy, then they would be happy. And, yeah, it was a different environment at that point in time on most things. I don't, you know, now you have to take so many pictures and post and you know, get approvals. And, you know, it is what it is. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's just a different world today than it was then.
Definitely. And I think the environment in the 80s is why we had so many amazing original creatures and so many amazing movies.
It's true.
But you guys also designed the dive suits for the movie, and you actually got some screen time in the dive suit.
I did. I did get some screen time in there. Yeah, that was kind of a fun story. It was, you know, because I would get in those suits and test them. And that was kind of one of the beginnings of me wanting to get, I know Tom was always getting in suits and everything, but right. I always grew up loving to do that too. And I ended up going on doing all kinds of, you know, different, you know, everything from raptors to gorillas to whatever. But I always liked it. And it was convenient because you knew it was going to be tough and you knew all of the things about it that was not going to be easy. And sometimes when an actor or some person gets in into that kind of a suit, they, you know, they're uncomfortable and, right. and they're expecting something different than what it is. It, you know, nobody said it's going to be easy to get in a dive suit, you know, right. or be a monster. Yeah.
It's usually and not easy.
No, it's not, because your vision is restricted and it's harder to breathe. And oh, there's a million things. And no matter how light or perfect you make it, there it's not their world. So right. it's uncomfortable to them. So I think both Tom and I had the mindset that, you know, if we can just get in there and do this, like Tom played the creature
right.
inside the suit. And because he's up for it, he knows what the rigors of that were going to be. And so out of necessity and out of just helping sell what we made, we started getting in these things and performing them and doing it. And at one point, the stunt team was like, oh, these suits are too hard to do this and that. And I mentioned this because it's just not their normal world.
Right.
And I just said to Stan, you know, I can put that on and do that. And then I ended up doing that. And, you know, it worked out. I don't know if I made any friends on the stunt team at the time, but it was just kind of like, it's not really that hard, but it's, you know, in their defense, it's just not their world. They're right. not used to.
And you knew exactly how the suit worked, how it was built.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little more exactly. familiar to you. And
correct.
And at the end
I
of the
knew
day,
what its shortcomings were. Right. And I knew, you know, how to play up its strengths. And I knew what they were looking for as far as a performance, you know, so that helped, you know, it really does.
Yeah, and that's cool that, you know, you're actually on the screen for some of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I know you guys all had to get scuba dive for certifications.
We did. We did.
Which is pretty cool. So you have like an extra skill under your belt from doing the movie.
That was fun and exciting. And I guess really at the end of the day, the only two people that needed it was Tom and I, because
yeah.
The way it shook out filming wise, somebody had to go down to Malta 2 weeks early to, you know, work with them underwater and doing the shots and things. And then Tom needed that kind of scuba training, you know, for working with air tanks and going underwater in the creature aspect
right.
of it. But, I ended up volunteering and I go, I'll go to Malta. And Shannon Shea went with me, but
okay.
he had problems diving and he couldn't really you know, he just had problems. I don't remember if it was his sinuses or his eardrums or
oh,
something
yeah.
he had trouble with it. So Shannon and I went down there, but Shannon always stayed on top and I would go underwater with the I think his name was Mike Valentine and his crew. He was an underwater photographer from London, and the dive suit jettisoning towards the surface. I think someone was escaping out of there. And so we were shooting all that stuff actually in the water.
Oh,
so that was
cool.
That was a new experience, you know, getting in dive gear and going underwater and helping rig that suit underwater. And it was quite an adventure. You know, you get up at the crack of dawn, getting on the boat, going out to sea and, you know, finding where you're going to shoot for the day. And you learn a lot about, you know, becoming an amateur sailor / diver.
No.
You know, you get thrust into it. I remember one day it was, we were underwater and it was all calm and it was fine. And then we came up to the surface and the boat was starting to head towards the rocks and there was this huge windstorm and
oh,
everything
no.
going on. And it's like, Yeah, so we get up onto the surface, and we've got these poles, and we're pushing the boat away from the rocks. And I mean, that's, I'm sure it's a typical day at sea.
But, wow.
You know, for me, it was a new experience, you know.
Wow,
but it was interesting,
scary.
You know, how calm it was underwater, but yet all this turbulent weather is going on above. And we didn't really have any idea till we surfaced. And it's like, oh my God, this is all going on.
Yeah, I am actually a certified scuba diver too. And it, you know, I've only gone out on a couple dives, but every time there's always something that, you know, unexpectedly happens, or you see mm-hmm. something crazy, and it's you know, something to be taken a whole lot of seriousness. And
you bet.
But I was reading the IMDb page for Leviathan, and I noticed a lot of the guys who worked on Fulci's Zombie, who did the underwater stuff for that, also worked on Leviathan on the Italian crew side, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, so I saw that. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, Fulci connection in Leviathan.
Yeah, there were Italian dive crew, of course. You know, I mean, and it was a lot of British, you know, a lion's share of Italians, but there were a lot of British, you know, I think the DP was English, and a lot of his crew mixed with, and there were some Americans down there. We were group of Americans. I think the stunt coordinator, Randy, I can't remember his last name, was American, along with the production designer and the set dresser. But it's really us. We were there. There was us and there's just a few other Americans, but it was a very international crew as far as it being English and, of course, Italian.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, I noticed Nick Alder was on there, you know, the special effects supervisor
right.
on Alien, also worked on this movie. So it's really cool to see, you know, all of the superstars from, you know, England, America, and Italy.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like working on this one awesome creature feature movie. Now,
yeah, it was a great experience. And then, you know, coupled with the movies experience, which was very interesting. And George is very colorful and expressive. And he was fun. He was fun to be around. And, you know, he liked us and what we were doing. But there was, it was interesting because, you know, as a bunch of young American guys over there in Rome, I mean, what an experience, you know, you get to live there for a while, and you get to, you know, see all of these great, you know, landmarks of Western civilization and, you know, the Italian food and culture and everything mixed in. So it was a great, great experience, really.
Wow.
Really enjoyed it.
That's so cool. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on now at Legacy Effects and what you're excited about?
We've got a couple of projects that we're trying to get developed that are our own projects. And we have one with Guillermo and Isa Lopez now that we're trying to get. It's a horror movie that
Ooh.
We're working on.
Interesting.
And hopefully that gets going. And but I am in the middle of season two of The Mandalorian. I did the first season.
Oh,
and so that's
nice.
Really, that's where a lot of my focus is. The shop is working on the second Suicide Squad, the one that James Gunn is doing. We also have an art installation that we're helping Tim Burton with in Las Vegas.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, so we have some pretty interesting stuff going on right now.
Hey, I feel something.
What are you talking about?
It did.
Wait a minute. I feel something, too.
Let's go.
Somebody's alive in here.
Come on.
All right, come on, let's flush it, Doc.
What do you mean, flush it? The human beings we're talking
Wait,
about.
I said everyone's alive.
Hold the silence. How about
let's do it, Doc.
Oh, my God, they're alive.
Come on, get it up.
Let's
here.
Have a look.
Oh!
Thanks for listening to Fangoria Presents Class of 89. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. And follow Fangoria on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the horror content you crave. Class of 89 is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, produced and hosted by Natasha Pesetta, executive producers Dallas Saunier and Phil Nobile Jr., associate producer Jessica Safavimer, art and design by Ashley Detmering, sound recording, design, and mixing by Natasha Pesetta, music by James Malone, for Fangoria, Brandon Winardi, Jason Koslerich, Rachel Wilson, and special thanks to Udo Kier.